Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and salutations to all. Welcome to this edition of Forward Pass Thinking Audio Content. I'm your host, as always, Jondras. And today, as always, after the Super Bowl, I'm joined by Matt Harmon. Matt Harmon, how the heck are you?
I'm good, Jondras. It's always good to talk to you. And yeah, it feels like we're definitely coming off kind of a down Super Bowl. It wasn't as exciting as maybe some of the prior games, just being the special two ones that the Patriots were just in versus the Falcons and Eagles. We're not quite as flying high right now given those results, but still happy with overall with this football season. And, you know, I do find myself not as sick to my stomach that the Patriots won another one, which I guess we can talk about.
So you feel like you've kind of numbed over. Is that what I just got from your last comment? You kind of feel like the Patriots are the best. What are we going to do? Who cares? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, I think I tweeted this after the game that basically, in my opinion, hating them is kind of like a waste of an emotion at this point. Because, like, what are you going to do? I mean, yeah, they're the best out there. They're certainly not boring. I know it's kind of hard to see the same team in there over and over and over and over again. But at the same time, what makes the Patriots so great is that they're basically like the chameleons of the NFL. They constantly adapt. They constantly change. The team that was in the Super Bowl just a few days ago is vastly different than the team that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago against the Falcons. It's even different than the group that was there last year against the Eagles. That's what makes the Patriots so fascinating, is that they change every single year. They're constantly adapting. So I've chosen to just kind of let go of the negative emotions surrounding the team and just become so fascinated with this dynasty in general.
You bring up two things there that I want to talk about. A, you kind of brought about how much they change over time and how year to year. People like to say that Brady's a system guy, or people like Edelman are system players. What system? You know, can you tell me what system they run, and then I can, you know, figure out if they're system players. Second thing I wanted to talk to you about, as somebody who pretends like they're a serious football analyst, on Twitter, I'll say things that, like, let's get into it. I think Edelman is making a strong case for the Hall of Fame, and when you say good things about players who... So everybody hates the Patriots, and I don't think a lot of people have gone over to your side of things where it's like, what are we going to do? They're the best. And I feel like it's our job, right, to be unbiased and to tell people what they see, but they're not going to like that because they want you to say nice things about their team. I've been raked over the coals over the Edelman thing is what I'm trying to say. Are you there with me or are you against me on this one?
I don't think that I'm there and that he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think it's ridiculous to talk about, especially in the moment that we're in right now, coming off a Super Bowl MVP performance. I mean, coming off a really strong playoff run. He's been a key member of this franchise for the last several years, and it's the best franchise in sports, at least in the NFL. So I don't think it's crazy to assert. I don't have a strong opinion on it. I think hey, you got to jump off a bridge if you don't answer this question. I think I would probably say he's not a Hall of Famer, but I don't think I'm going to rake you over the coals for it at the same time. So I understand that it's worth having the discussion right now. I still think that he's probably not a Hall of Famer, but I don't think it's crazy to assert at this point. I mean, he's a key member of the story that is the New England Patriots. So no, I don't think it's crazy.
And I feel like I'm projecting a little, because why is Andy Reid going to beat Bill Belichick? You know what I mean? Like, why next year is that going to change? You know what I mean? So, like, who's going to take down the Patriots? Like, we're 3 years in of them going to the Super Bowl every year. I don't understand why that would change. Do you know what I mean? I don't get it.
Well, that's why it's like, yeah, resistance is futile, basically. That's what how I feel like right now. You know, submit to the empire has basically been my calling point for the last few weeks since it became apparent that they were going to go to another Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know. Now, look, football is a strange sport. It's a sport that's built on small sample sizes. Anything can happen within a four-quarter event or even, you know, a little bit of overtime, which we saw a couple times here in the postseason. So, I mean, certainly I think teams like the Chiefs are very much good enough to beat them, especially, look, the Chiefs right now, while they have, you know, literal God incarnate at quarterback and they have so many interesting offensive playmakers, that was a team with very clear, definable holes. And those are the teams that we've seen New England just make mincemeat of over and over and over again. You know, they don't cover well on the back end. Their run defense is a total joke. They can rush the passer, but there are a lot of holes in that defense. The interior of the offensive line was a big problem. We saw the Patriots attack them. So I think the Chiefs could easily get into the Super Bowl next year and beat New England. But what makes them so great, the Patriots, is that they do have that clear and definable roster building strategy. We can talk about the system thing because that is a discussion worth having too. But the way they build their roster is a system. It's Brady, it's Belichick, and then it's just figure the rest of it out. You know, put pieces together. Don't be clearly defined to one way of building things. Be flexible. And that's what's made then, you know, winning on the margins is what's made them such a great team. And that's why I think most of the AFC is just kind of spinning their wheels like, hey, we got to wait for these guys to kick the bucket until we can really have a lot of shot, have some more wider windows in across the NFL.
Do you think we talk about Dante Hightower enough? I mean, he had the biggest play in the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, you know, that led to the Butler pick. He had the strip sack on Matt Ryan, right? That kind of changed things. And then he was all over the field on Sunday. Do you think we talk about him enough?
I mean, he's like the consummate Patriots player that, you know, just like Edelman turns into Jerry Rice when it's time to win the Super Bowl, you know, Dante Hightower turns into Bruce, you know, Lawrence Taylor when it's time to win the Super Bowl, you know. So I think there's something to be said. I thought that if the Rams had really come out, you know, in three wide receiver sets, maybe mix in a couple of 12 personnel every now and again. And especially, I thought it was crazy that we didn't see more of Gurley as a pass catcher, because while Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy are almost like they're more defensive ends than these faster, thinner, lighter linebackers, are almost more like safeties that we see across the NFL nowadays. Mm-hmm. What those two guys bring to the table is that heavier pass rushing ability. They're slower, but they can get out after it on blitzes. And I thought the Rams really missed an opportunity. I thought Sean McVay specifically missed an opportunity to not target those guys in coverage more. And really, they played right into the Patriots' hand in that regard, because that's what we consistently see with them is the ability of those guys as blitzers. You're right to call out Dante Hightower in that regard.
I was confused at the end of the first half of the Super Bowl. The Patriots got the ball about the 1.5 or the 2 on their own side of the field. Brady kneels it down to try to get out of the half. McVay doesn't call his two timeouts. Why not force them to run two more plays at their goal line? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think it's worth – there's a lot of decisions throughout the game. I think you can question – both Sean McVay and Jared Goff to a certain extent, for sure. So that's a question for the Rams going forward. Is Sean McVay has proven to be one of the best, if not the best, play caller in the NFL right now when he's on his designed script. When things are going to plan for the LA Rams, Goff is a great quarterback, and McVay is, you know, one of the three to two best coaches in the NFL right there with Bill Belichick. What the Rams have not shown an ability to do, and this was very apparent over the second half of the season, is to do what the Patriots and Bill Belichick do best, which is adapt, play left-handed, win on the margins. Those are the things that the Rams have to do going forward in order to reach their ceiling of a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, and McVay is 6 years older than me, and in 6 years I will not be coaching the Super Bowl. I guess you kind of answered the question I was going to ask next about what they need to do to kind of bounce back from this. But you mentioned Gurley earlier. What do you think is really going on there? Do you think they're lying about him being injured, or do you think it's a psychological thing? What do you think is going on with Gurley? And can you project going forward what this means for fantasy football in 2019?
I have to think he's not healthy. And maybe I'm just willingly accepting kind of the easy way out, even though it's with the in direct contrast to what the team is telling us. I have to think he's not healthy. I have to think he's not right. You know, whatever incentive that they might have to not tell us, you know, that whatever their reasoning is for not telling us that he's not healthy, whatever that is, just it is what it is. I think he must be some sort of injured. You know, let's remember that this is a guy who did tear his ACL in college, had a major knee injury that he brought with him to the NFL. We did see him sustain an MCL injury this year. So I think maybe there's just some lingering effects there. In terms of what this means for fantasy football in 2019, if CJ Anderson is back on this team, I think they clearly found a way to integrate him into the offense. Now, they didn't always do a great job of integrating him and Todd Gurley at the same time, which is, I think, part of the issue that we saw in the New Orleans game. Part of what we saw in the Super Bowl is that I don't think they figured out a way to have both the backs involved in the offense at the same time. So I think it's certainly a question that we will debate. And you have to wonder, are you going to take Todd Gurley in a great offense in a potential timeshare, or are you going to take somebody like Saquon Barkley in probably a middling to below average offense when you can count on him to handle all the work? Are you going to take him? Are you going to take Todd Gurley over a Christian McCaffrey, who you can count on to get all the work? I mean, these are the questions that we'll debate in the months going forward.
When CJ Anderson signed with the Panthers, I thought Norv Turner was going to turn him into a fullback, and then you're going to have McCaffrey in the backfield. I don't see why McVay couldn't do the same thing, where you have Todd Gurley running back, and then you have Anderson as the fullback. I don't know. But McVay's smarter than me. So hey, talking about fantasy football, Sony Michel, where do you think his ADP is going to be next year?
Oh, I think he'll be an early third rounder, late second rounder. You know, this is the thing about the running back market, man, that is very different than in years prior. Like, I feel like 2 years ago we were asking, I mean, how many of these guys do you possibly want to take in the first few rounds? Like, the running back pool dried up so quickly. Now, I think there's abundance of options. You know, we just talked about Barkley. We just talked about Gurley. And you know, you can go throughout the entire running back market and not
Bell's
even mention a guy like
in some form.
Is coming back. David Johnson might be in a better offense. We never talk about Melvin Gordon as a feature back, but when he is right, when he's healthy, he's just as good as any of these guys in fantasy football. I mean, he was a total stud to start the year. So there's an abundance of guys to take in the first three rounds. I think Michel will get up there. The question you have to ask about him is, he going to have any role in the passing game next year that he didn't have this year? And it's hard to sell on that issue. Like, if you think about it, they essentially just drafted LeGarrette Blount, a younger, sleeker model of LeGarrette Blount in the first round last year, which is crazy. But nevertheless, it's exactly what happened. I mean, they didn't use Michel almost at all in the passing game. They just strictly ran him on power runs, you know, with the offensive line, with two tight ends, everything like that. And is that role going to be different? Because then he's a tougher guy to sell, because the floor is going to be so dangerous from a week-to-week perspective.
Can I pat myself in the back for a second? Would you be fine with that?
Go for it.
Do you remember 2 years ago before Chris Carson's rookie year, when I was asking you, do you think Chris Carson is a cool hipster pick? And then I was eventually proven right. Do you remember that?
Yes. I mean, he's okay, still your Skyping right now. He's still your avatar here, so you nailed that one.
Yeah, okay. I just want to pat myself on the back. Hey, do you know who should be patted on the back? Wade Phillips. I mean, I really feel like this performance out of his defense is going to get lost time, but do you think Wade Phillips has kind of been the junior head coach there, the Rams, the last few years. Do you think we talk about Wade Phillips enough?
Yeah, you're exactly right that it is going to get lost in the history books, because, of course, the Rams didn't win, and they, you know, overall as a team, especially on offense, put up such a poor performance, but that is the brilliance of what we got to see in that game, is that we got to see probably the two best defensive minds in the NFL right now, Wade Phillips and Bill Belichick, going up. And we have to talk about Brian Flores, who's now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. You know, he's certainly a part of that defensive operation. We got to see those guys go back and forth for 60 minutes. And I am 100% with you. Like, as bad as the Rams offense looked, the Patriots offense and Tom Brady weren't getting anything going really for most of this game. So I think Wade Phillips did a great job this year. The question with the Rams as a whole, and you know, you asked earlier, like, what do they have to do to get back? And I think a lot of this comes down to Wade on defense. They're going to lose a lot of guys, you know, going like the Rams went all in this year.
Mm-hmm. Sue was a rental.
Sue was a rental. Dante Fowler is going to hit free agency. Marcus Peters' deal is coming up. You know, Aqib Talib didn't stay healthy this year and is another year older. What does his future look like? I think Wade has to become a clear part of it. And I have more respect to Wade Phillips than almost any other coach in the NFL. I interviewed Rams slot corner, the now infamous Rams slot corner, Nickell Robey-Coleman, last fall at the NFL Network. And he was so great about breaking down everything that makes Wade Phillips such a unique head coach in the NFL and why playing in his system is so beneficial for so many of these players. I think they do have to figure the defense out a little bit because it wasn't really a plus unit throughout the year, even though it totally did step up in the playoffs. And I think that's, you know, winning on the margins has to be what the Rams do going forward, because the Goff decision is looming. I mean, that are they going to make him, you know, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL? Because that's probably what it's going to cost. And that's going to come down to Wade Phillips to boost that defense up to being a clearly top 10 type unit that can take advantage of the big leads that they will have going forward, because that didn't always happen in 2018.
You mentioned that you used to work at the NFL Network. If you have any friends still at NFL Films, can you pass? I have a title that I think this maybe isn't the most creative thing, but you have the Brady 6 sequel and you title it Brady 6 Rings. How about that?
I'm sure that is going to be discussed. Okay. I'm sure I can promise that that'll get discussed.
Do you think everybody was mad at the Patriots and Jimmy G, you know, they trade away Jimmy G and Brady's, you know, 39 at the time or 40 at the time. How did the Patriots already win that trade by, you know, just allowing Brady to stay, or how much more do they need to do to win that trade? Because Jimmy G, before he went down this year, was an average quarterback. I'm not saying that's what he's going to be in the future, but at what point would the Patriots just flat out win that trade?
I don't know, because they got so little back. Yeah. You know, that's the tough part, is that they got that second round pick back. You would have thought that there would have been much more to get out of that. You know, I thought they probably could have timed it better in terms of when they traded him. You would have thought that if they'd done it in the offseason, they might have had a lot better offers. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there was no way that they could keep those two on the roster together for the long term, because Garoppolo was going to cost too much money. Brady's, you know, he's not one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL because he consistently takes team friendly deals.
But you're also going to have his backup making more money.
Yeah, you can't have that. Like I said, an untenable situation keeping them on the roster together for the long term. So I don't know if they win that trade necessarily. I still think it's probably something that Belichick wishes he could have back and maybe just, again, time it better. But what are you going to do? Because Brady's still around. He's still playing well. You're not going to turn the reins over to anybody else.
Yep. Hey, what do you think has helped Brady more, the rule changes to protect a quarterback or sports science?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say probably sports science, and whatever he's doing from a personal perspective to keep himself in this kind of shape. But I think playing in New England is what's helped Brady the most. I mean, would the Tom Brady story have happened if he had landed in any other place with any other head coach? I don't think so. I mean, the beauty of Brady in that offense, they don't, like we talked about earlier, they don't run a system. Like, especially on defense, they don't run a system. They have changed what they do over the course of the Belichick era multiple times. But what the New England offense consistently does for Brady is it constantly presents him with layup throws. It constantly presents him with easy throws to make. You know, whether it's when no one else was throwing to the running backs out of the backfield, the Patriots were making it a featured part. When they had two advantages at the tight end position, they made that a featured part. When the slot receiver is the most efficient player to throw to on a wide receiver basis, they've constantly made that position a priority in terms of the archetype of player that they're looking to get. When Welker was starting to fade, they found the next Welker. You know, not only did, and people forget that they didn't, you know, target Julian Edelman, they actually targeted Danny Amendola. And they happen to kind of fall into Julian Edelman, but it at least shows you that they were prioritizing that position. That has made life easier for Brady, I think, almost he's more than anything else.
You know, you bring up every time you bring up the system thing, I think about trolls on Twitter. But then I saw Mina Kimes tweet. She retweeted somebody that said, "Is this the best YouTube comment of all time?" And it was somebody saying that it's the dumbest thing ever when you bring up that they're in 11 personnel because there are 11 players on the field every play. And it just makes me feel better. You know what I mean? Does that kind of stuff make you feel better when you get – how much Twitter hate do you get? Because I get it constantly.
I don't know. I mean, I try to keep my takes reasonable on, mm-hmm. you know, not just on Twitter, but anywhere to the point where I kind of don't filter myself, but I at least don't actively go out there like looking for, you know, people to react to me or whatever. There's definitely ways to navigate hate by not engaging in it, not, you know, immediately stepping in it and you know, making it worse. But there's always hate out there, man. And I think it's worth considering that there are some people that don't want to think when it comes to football. And I kind of get that from their perspective. Like, one of the best interviews that I think I listened to throughout Super Bowl week, it was Robert, I think it was on the Ringer podcast, like, and they were talking to Brian Curtis, who works there too. And he was talking about what makes Tony Romo so great. And what makes Tony Romo so great is he's able to bridge the divide between the fans that want to know every in and out about football. You don't want to talk about 11 personnel and play action passes and, you know, the stuff that you and I, because we're in this all day, like we think about this stuff all the time. We want to know the game in and out, you know. But there are a lot of people out there that just want to watch football and get excited about it and, you know, crack a few beers and have a good time. Romo is able to navigate both of those audiences because he can teach you about the game, but he also gets excited like a freaking 12-year-old. And that's why both sides of the fan base of football love him. You know, there are certainly people out there that don't give a damn about 11 personnel and yards per play out of 11 personnel, but there's a lot of fans that do. And that's the interesting part about football, is that there are a lot of fans out there that just want to view the game very, very differently. And it's hard as an analyst to navigate that because you want to be able to give engaging content to people out there, but you also don't want to leave people behind. You don't want to talk over people or make people think they're stupid. So it's a tough business to navigate as an analyst, but I think there are a lot of people that do a great job with it.
I feel like this was some good therapy. I needed that. Thank you. Hey, you talked about 12-year-olds. How excited were you to see SpongeBob at the halftime show?
I mean, what a sight. What a sight. It was the best part of the halftime show, I think. Yeah, that was great. I mean, SpongeBob it's amazing that he's still in the culture. What an accomplishment.
Also, you know, talking about children here, you know, Lamar Hunt flat out talks about how he ripped off the name of the Super Bowl from the Super Bowl. How can the NFL protect this trademark so vigorously when they've already talked about how they ripped it off? It makes no sense to me.
I mean, you're way out of my pay grade here, my friend. Right. I don't know anything when it comes to trademarks, but the NFL will never hesitate to flex its legal muscle, I'll tell you that.
Hey, Daron Harmon forced the pressure that led to the Gilmore pick. Pretty good day for the Harmon household, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was with a lot of family. I was able to travel back home. My sister just got engaged.
Mazel tov.
We threw a surprise engagement party for us, so I made sure to make sure I was getting out of all my work assignments and went and flew back for that. The next day, we watched the Super Bowl all together as a family, and that was the first time I ever got to make, oh, look, it's our cousin Duron, with the whole family present. So it was a big moment for the family, for sure.
So we talked about golf a little bit. You brought up the contract that's looming at some point. He really hasn't been the same player since that wild Monday night game against Kansas City. What do you think the future holds for golf?
Oh, this is one of the hardest questions in sports, I think, to ask right now.
Mm-hmm. Because he really started very slow against the Saints in the NFC Championship game, too. And there was one point in the third quarter where I was thinking, all right, well, he has his sea legs under him now. It started the same way against the Saints, but he just never got there.
Well, I think when he is in structure, I think Goff is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, from a pure thrower perspective, I think he's great. I think when he sees his first read, he's quick about getting it out. But, you know, playing in structure is not a given at the NFL level.
Oh, yeah.
No. Certainly not when you're playing against the best teams, playing against somebody like Bill Belichick. I mean, forget about it. He's going to consistently get you off of your first foot. He's going to get you onto your second read. He's going to make you think. And so far, Goff has not proven to be – and I think, again, you could say that Sean McVay has maybe not proven to be a coach that can adjust to playing left-handed as well. I think you could certainly say that. But the question is going to come down for the Rams. Do you want to commit top dollar to him? And I think it's a tough question to answer because – and I personally – look, John, as I'll tell you, I would love to see a team like the Rams just – eschew signing the big money quarterback like a Jared Goff is going to demand to be.
This is the next question. Because
I think it's so fascinating. Look, if you tie yourself to a Matthew Stafford type, you know, a guy who has, I think at this point, proven to be a quarterback who is good, but not a difference maker enough to elevate you to a Super Bowl quality team on his own. Signing a player like that to top five quarterback money kills your roster. You can ask the question, is Kirk Cousins that guy for the Minnesota Vikings? I think 1 year in, it's probably too hard to say definitively right now, but I think the question is at least on the table. That kills your roster if that quarterback is not a true individual difference maker. I don't think at this point that you can say Jared Goff is a true individual difference maker. Maybe by the end of 2019, we're singing a different tune. That's totally possible. But the Rams have to ask themselves, are they better off letting their quarterback walk, willingly going into the quarterback wilderness, you know, bringing on a cheap rookie contract guy, bringing on some veterans and giving yourself a plethora of options, is that better than committing top dollar to this guy? So we can continue to bring in the Ndamukong Suhs of the world. We continue to trade for Marcus Peters. You know, we can rent Dante Fowler in the middle of the season. Having a top five quarterback on your roster takes those things off the table. I would love to see a team try to do this, but I don't think any teams have the stones to do it because when you are in quarterback wilderness, it's a miserable existence. And the devil that you know versus the devil that you don't is always more appealing to NFL teams who have not just wins and losses tied up into this, but marketability, you know, visibility. And a top quarterback, even if we can debate where Jared Goff falls on that spectrum, he certainly makes the Rams more marketable than if it's some random third round rookie in there.
Well, because he's so handsome. But yes, that was going to be it because we saw what the Eagles did, you know, although Carson Wentz didn't play in the Super Bowl, you know, he on his rookie deal, the Seahawks of 2012 with Russell Wilson on his rookie deal. That was going to be the question because if you can keep in bringing, but obviously it's hard to keep getting the right guy, but if you can always have that quarterback on the rookie deal, because that's what the Bears are trying to do right now. They're trying to make hay while Mitchell Trubisky's still in that rookie deal. They have all those guys on defense. That's going to blow up at some point soon. Man, right. I am excited that you answered that question that way because I'm thinking the same thing.
I think the difference between the Seattle Seahawks, like they were a perfect test case, I think, to try to do this. But Russell Wilson eventually proved himself to be that true individual difference maker. I mean, there's no way you can let like that. There's no way you can let that player walk. There's no way you can let a potential top eight, top five quarterback like Russell Wilson walk out the door.
Because doesn't that make the Goff thing more interesting then? Because Russell Wilson's sitting there in division, so you need to be able to compete with him twice a year.
Right. And I think you just have to ask yourself, what's the gap between Jared Goff and the potential next guy we bring in versus what our roster is going to look like with Jared Goff making $33 million a year or something, and you know the rest of the team that we're going to be able to surround him with. That's the gap that they need to settle with themselves. And again, that's probably the hardest question to ask yourself in sports because the Eagles, I think, they can't feel great about Carson Wentz's ability to stay healthy. That's certainly something, but they also can definitely, I think, feel great about Wentz as a potential individual difference maker. So when it comes time to extend him, it's going to hurt. But I think they can feel better about the product they're going to get than the Rams have to feel about Jared Goff right now. Like, there's a way to have this discussion like we're having it right now without there being like a hot take element. Because I think there's so many fascinating questions to ask based on this question.
I actually – this isn't about the Super Bowl, but I think the Eagles are kind of being a jerk to Nick Foles right now. I know it's a business, blah, blah, blah. But the guy won you a Super Bowl, you know, pay him the respect of just cutting him, right? Am I naive?
I,
or...
I kind of take a different perspective than you on this one, because I think the Eagles and Foles are really both trying to do right by each other, because the Eagles love Nick Foles, and I think Nick Foles loves the Eagles. They both realize that they will no longer be able to stay together, and I think that, look, Nick Foles is going to go – I think he will have to agree to go to a place and sign a contract for them to make a trade. I don't think they're just going to trade him to, you know, Miami or something and throw him into a complete tank job of an organization. But what I think the sell there for Foles will still work with the Eagles to find that destination. I think on the Eagles side, what Foles has assured them is, hey, now I'm not going to go into free agency and sign with Washington or sign with the Giants and potentially boost their quarterback position, because both those teams are desperately hurting behind center right now. I think that's the trade-off. Is Foles is going to have an input on where he goes. The Eagles are then going to get compensated by it. And Foles is also doing right by them by, again, getting them that compensation and then assuring them, hey, I'm not going to go and play in the division and face you guys twice a year and make it an awkward situation for your fans, for your franchise, and for me if I come back and beat you twice a year. And then everybody's asking questions, did you do the right thing at the quarterback position?
I really would have liked to see Barkley, Odell, and Foles. That, I don't know. That's what I want to see as a football fan who does not care about the NFC East all that much. Hey, you put out a tweet with some high production value. Did you do the video editing on that self, or do you have some friends? How do you pull something off like that?
I think you're referring to my – technically right now I haven't unfrozen myself from carbon freezing, Jonders. I'm going to do that right after I'll put up second part of that video right after we get off this podcast here. But I think what you're referring to, obviously, is the Han Solo carbon freezing. No, I did not do – it was my idea. And then the beautiful social media video editors here at Yahoo Sports, Michael Wagstaff and Avery, put that together – Avery Mitchell, and put that together. And they did a great job with it, taking my stupid little joke vision and bringing it to life.
That's one of my favorite feelings in the world, is when I have a dumb joke I want to pull off and other people help facilitate it. It's the best. What was it? I just had something and I lost it. We were talking about. Oh, hey, did you see Infinity War?
Yes. The
Avengers movie. One of my favorite parts. I'm a huge nerd. One of my favorite parts of that movie, though, is when Gamora says to Star-Lord, "I love you." And Star-Lord, who is obviously probably a Star Wars fan back when he was on Earth, instead of saying "I know," he says "I love you too." I thought it was I love that moment, because like it was. Not to denigrate Star Wars or anything, but it was... I'm trying to make here. You know what I'm trying to say? Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a callback, but they put it in a different way.
He wasn't too cool for the moment. You know what I mean? Like, it's all cool that Han Solo is all cool, but, like, also, I don't know. The woman he loves is right there. Just say, "I love you."
Yeah, Star-Lord was the... more of the modern day man, the sensitive fella that
there
was okay, showing his feelings in the moment. You know, you got to remember, Star Wars was, that was a galaxy far, far away, a long, long time ago. You know, so things really hadn't progressed then in terms of the man female dynamic.
There you go. See, and that's the kind of insight you get when you have Matt Harmon on your podcast, everybody. All right, Matt Harmon. At Matt Harmon _ BYB.
B. There you go.
Yep, there you go. Thank you so much for doing this. It's always a gay time when you're on, and maybe we'll... when was the last time you were on? Did we do a year? Let's not make it a year this time.
Absolutely. You just let me know. I'm down to come back anytime. This is a great conversation. We went on a number of different ways. So far.
Yep, all right. Thank you so much. Bye. Jondra's here still. I'm joined by Rostog. Rostog, say hi.
Yo.
For the last time of the year, Rostog is saying hi. I can't believe it. We made it through 3 years. The haters said that this dynasty would end. The haters said that there's no way we can go back and do a third year. We proved all the haters wrong, Rostog.
Yeah, we did. It's like I haven't reached year 3 of my marriage yet. But I imagine I will have a similar relationship with Katie as I have with you in year 3. So you know.
We're very close. We spend most nights together. Did you did you watch the Super Bowl with Poochie and that church that you usually go to?
Yeah, so this year, I have a funny story for you because this year they moved it out of, it used to be in like a gymnasium, and it was awesome. And this year they moved it into the hall of the church. So it was, what is it, St. Michael's maybe, or St. Joe's? St. Joe's on 30.
Okay,
They have that school, and then on 30 they have the church. So they moved us into the hall this year, and I think I've put
are you sure it's not St. Mike's by Kaler?
I'm sure. Okay. It's the one by Shooks.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So I put some context clues together, and I have deducted that we were quarantined into, like, so imagine you have the hall of the church, and then, you know, like, attached to the hall, they have, like, those CCD rooms, you know, mm-hmm. like the Bible school studies. We were essentially in one of there with Vince's dad's friends and, like, the people he invites, but it is because we are now 4 years in a row easily, like, no question about it, the most drunk people there. And we are, like, siphoned off into a room, and it was fun. And I made a bet with a guy that we would drink over 150 beers as a table, and there were like 11 of us. And last year, mind you, we drank 123. So we added two people. I said, no problem, we'll easily reach 150. And we only got to 137, so I lost money to this guy. But towards the end of the night, they were closing down the bar, and I was going up, and I kept saying, we can't drink 150 beers if we don't have 150 beers. So I kept going to the bar and getting three beers at a time and just handing them out to people in our room. I was like, you need another beer. You have to drink another beer. By the end of the Super Bowl, I was so drunk I couldn't call myself an Uber. I was screaming at people saying, who won the Super Bowl? And Chobbs would look at me and he would scream, not Tom Brady, not Tom Brady. Because, I mean, yes, he didn't throw a million touchdowns. But, yeah, we lost. I drank a lot of beer. It was a lot of fun.
We didn't text at all during the Super Bowl, and I thought that was a little odd.
I was
but
busy
I
drinking
guess...
150 beers.
Yeah, it checks out.
Like, I cared so little about the game. I was more concerned with seeing if I could drink the beer. But, I don't know. I mean, what do you have to say about the game that I guess hasn't been said? I don't know.
And I don't know. Me and Matt Harmon covered a lot of it in the interview that will precede this. What is the word? Is that the right word?
Come before.
Come before, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I just really don't feel like talking about, like, the... It was boring again.
But, I don't think it was boring. You know? I think it was a different type of game than, like, the Chiefs at... in Los Angeles.
Monday Night Football.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like it was a super tense experience. Like, I am a Russell Wilson Seahawks fan, but as anybody who listens to this podcast knows, that I've kind of become, like, a secondary Tom Brady fan, just because, I don't know, it's great watching the greatest... Also, this is what I haven't said this yet, I don't think, on a podcast, but I think if you're a fan of a team that has lost to Brady or beat Brady in the Super Bowl, you, unless they're playing this current year, you want Tom Brady to win, because I think that it makes the Seahawks loss look better. Like, oh, they lost to Tom Brady, who's won, you know, six. You know what I mean? Like, or if you're Nick Foles, who's like, hey, like, he just won six, but he didn't get one on me. Like, I think you should want Tom Brady to win unless he's playing your team this year. Does that make sense?
Oh, one perfect sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, if you're a Giants fan, you're like, dude, we got him twice. Like, you guys all suck.
Right. He is the, you know, he's the crown everyone's trying to, you know, grab for themselves. I don't know what else there is to say about him. I don't know what else there is really to say about the game that you probably haven't already said.
He didn't agree with me, but he wasn't mad at me that I was assessing that Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. I started that campaign. Well, I didn't start it. I jumped on Nate Burleson of NFL Network's campaign last week, and I think the Super Bowl performance kind of like cements the idea of why he's the Hall of Famer, because he's now second all-time receptions and yards in postseason history. He's going to keep playing, and I don't see why Tom Brady and company won't make a deep push next year. I mean, well, who's going to beat him? Is Andy Reid going to figure out how to beat Bill Belichick somehow? That's not going to happen. So,
yeah.
He's only going to add to this legacy of his, and I think Julian Edelman will get in because if you're on a dynasty, you get in more easily than if you're not on a dynasty. That's just how it works.
Oh, now, for sure. Yeah, exactly. Common sense.
And the Patriots are on a double dynasty now. They're the first double dynasty. It's ridiculous.
I've literally never heard that phrase before because I don't think there's ever really been a team. And when you say double dynasty, you're talking about two different periods of time. But I would really argue that it's been pretty much Tom Brady. And, like, he started the dynasty, and it's not going to end until he's done.
My thought is, like, so the Bulls of the 90s was one dynasty because it was one decade. I kind of view dynasties as, you know, like the team of the decade, right? But the Patriots were the team of the aughts and the team of the teens. So that's why I'm considering them a double dynasty.
A double dynasty back-to-back.
Or back-to-back dynasty.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, you can argue that, like, you know, early Celtics teams were dynasties, but, like, they were dynasties in, like, you know, separate chunks of time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I guess you could make that argument about anything.
And I don't know enough about the NHL, but I'm sure when there were four teams, there were some, you know. Do you want to kind of recap the year, or do you want more stuff about the Patriots? What was your thought? Then let's move on to the rest of the recap of the year.
I have a thought about Tom, and then, sure, we can do that. So I had said in either the divisional or championship round games that Tom will probably win the Super Bowl again, and if he does that, he should just, you know, he should just call it quits. And
I don't recall this. Was I upset when you said this?
I don't know. Maybe I wasn't, like, providing as much of a take as I was just saying, like, why doesn't he just do this type of thing? You know, it seems to me that he might not get a better opportunity than this one. Because teams are,
you're sticking by this take?
Yes.
I disagree because why? No, because it's the same thing I was just talking to Harmon about, and I just brought this up. Like, why? Who in the AFC is going to compete with the Patriots next year? I don't care what the turnover is on the Patriots roster. They still have Bill Belichick, who outcoached, I mean, just flat out outcoached McVay. McVay looked foolish out there on several occasions. And who in the AFC is going to take down the Patriots? They held the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Rams all to 0 points in the first half of their playoff games. Seriously, though,
it's
the
funny.
Chiefs and the Rams.
It's funny when you say it like that. And, okay, I mean, all right, honestly, the dude could play till he's 46 years old if he keeps just – he's not getting hit. He gets rid of the ball too fast. It just all seems a little bit too easy for him, you know?
Man, I don't think there's more than five quarterbacks in the NFL that can make – maybe five's even giving him credit, because who can make those throws that he made to Gronk on that last drive? You know, I mean,
absolute dimes.
Yeah, I mean, but the arc on the ball, I mean, it wasn't just that they were accurate, it was the way those balls came in, you know what I mean? It was a 3D passing game. And, like, I think Russ could do that. I think Drew Brees on his best day can do that. I don't think there are a lot of guys that can do that, though. So if you're Tom Brady and you're 42 next year, like, why would you stop when you could do this thing that, you know, Jared Goff can't do?
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I'm so, like I said, I don't know if mine's necessarily a take because I love Tom too much. And if he were to continue playing, let's say hypothetically, if Tom were to play three more years and wins another Super Bowl, like, What is that? What I mean,
dude, 7 out of 10 looks just unbelievable. You know what I mean?
Seven out of ten doesn't even sound right. You know?
I know, dude. 30-10 is his playoff record. The next best playoff winning, or so Joe Montana has 16 playoff wins. That's second. Tom Brady has cleared him by 14 wins.
And that's where, like, this argument doesn't make any sense anymore. Just, like, please just... There's literally no other side to the argument. It is a true-false matter now. Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. Like, without doubt.
Yeah, because Joe Montana is 16-7 with a winning percentage of 69.6, and Tom Brady is 30 out of 10 with a 0.75 winning percentage. It's just, he has the best winning percentage. You know, I mean, you can say Bart Starr went 9-1, but he played 10 games.
Yeah.
Trent Dilfer actually has a better playoff record percentage. He went 5-1, and so did Sid Luckman of your Bears.
Well, I don't know. Just if you just look at the raw record, it's so hard to argue. And yeah, you saying 7 out of 10 Super Bowls that's just asinine.
But we also thought that about 6 out of 9. You know what I mean? Like, this is all wacky, you know, funhouse numbers. Like, they're not real things.
It really is.
Let's talk about your Bears. Where do we see them going next year? Before we get do that, let's talk about somebody else from Chicago. Did you know that Michael Jordan's playoff series record is 30-7?
Wow. I didn't know that.
So who's the GOAT? Tom Brady or Michael Jordan?
I mean, if you're comparing records, I guess it has to be Jordan. But the NBA playoff, again, this is why I don't like this argument, because basketball is so much different than football.
Yep.
And the NBA postseason is wildly different. You play best out of 7 series. In football, you play one game in any team. I think that's why football's crazy. Any team can win on any given Sunday. Movie with Al Pacino.
Hoo-wah! Okay, let's forget this. I think Tom Brady's the best of all time. I don't care what other people think. I think that the Rams are going to regress next year. They had a lot of rentals, and also there might be a Super Bowl hangover, and the Seahawks win the NFC West. Way too early prediction. I don't care. What do you think about your Bears? And then we'll get out of here.
Oh, I like that. I think you're probably right. With the Rams and Seahawks prediction there. Bears win the NFC closely against Aaron Rodgers, but...
The NFC or the NFC North?
The NFC North, sorry. Okay, the division.
That's because of the big difference.
Yeah, no. The Bears will win the NFC North, but it's not going to be as easy as it was for them this year. However, I think when they play the Packers in games where the Packers actually have, you know, our players on the field that aren't injured, we're gonna finally murder Aaron Rodgers on live television.
Can I tell you something? They're gonna move. Yep. The rumors are that they're gonna move the banner game to Sunday Night Football, and they want to have the Thursday Night Football representative of the, you know, NFL 100 season. And there's a good chance that the game that would make the most sense to represent the NFL's 100th season would be the Packers and Bears. So there's a good chance that the first game of the year is going to be the Packers at the Bears, or Bears at the Packers.
Wow. I would love that.
That's how you kick off the 100th season, baby.
I mean, yeah, as long as the Bears aren't wearing the patch, then I'm cool with it.
I think everybody's going to have a 100-year patch, and I think you're also going to like have those really ugly...
So if everybody has a patch, does the patch... What do you call it? The curse?
Every team's going to go 0-0-16.
Does it cancel out?
No, every team's going to go 0-0-16.
Okay, yeah, that's. I think the Bears are going to have a good roll of it. Again, I think their defense is going to be good, but I wanted to ask you if you think Vic Fangio is going to have like a noticeable impact being gone.
I don't think so. I like Chuck Pagano. I think he had a really crap situation in Indy. Ryan Grigson was not a legitimate NFL GM, and he was stuck with him. So he wasn't really given a good roster at all in Indy. So, I mean, giving him Khalil Mack and Hicks and, you know, Floyd and those safeties, Jackson and why can't I think of the other safety's name?
Amos.
Adrian Amos. Yeah, well, and
so
Fuller's under contract still, right? Because Prince Amukamara is going to walk?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I need to get...
He would be the most likely one.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing the next couple weeks, is getting up to date with every single NFL team's free agency situation.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking the same thing about Chuck Pagano, but I like to hear you say it. It makes me feel good.
Well, that's what I'm here for. Make sure you check out my other podcast, I Owe You an Interview. I had a great interview with Stephen Plock up there. Rostog might check in. He usually checks in a couple times during the non-playing season, so we'll get him at some point back on the pod. But follow him at RostogFPT. In the meantime, make sure you follow me at JondersFPT. Give us a 5-star review, and we'll still be putting out content. Maybe we might take a week off. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But subscribe at Apple Podcasts. All right. Bye, everybody. Wait, do you have any last words, Rostog, before you're gone for the next few months or whatever?
No. Final Fantasy X HD Remake and X-2 is coming out for the Switch. So you should play that. It's like the best Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, so we were going to lose Rostog either way.
Yeah, it's my fave.
All right, I might play it. All right, bye, everybody. It was an enchanting game.
You notice the word you used right there and how you had to think about it?
Yeah, enchanting is a great word that took me a little bit to grab out of my brain dictionary.
Sorry. No, yeah, my problem is that, like, it's just, like, not, it's not the Pokemon game I want to play. That's all. I'm being very honest. I'm not saying that it's a bad game. It's just I don't see myself spending $60 on it this year when I also know that I will be spending $60 on a Pokemon game.
Which is crazy because
if you think about it, like, all Pokemon games up until this point, before they've been on Switch, have not been $60. This is going to be the first Pokemon game besides Let's Go, Pikachu, and Eevee that's $60.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? Sorry.
I'm afraid I'm going to double dip and get Let's Go Eevee. I'm terrified.
Sorry.
Tactical RPGs.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what Mario plus Rabbids is?
I think so. I don't know. I've never really been into them all that much, but I've been digging Wargroove.
Yeah, isn't that... That's the Advance Wars game, right?
Yep.
I fucking love Advance Wars. And I just bought... when Into the Breach went on sale, I got that for, like... I think I got it for free because I had enough gold points.
Yeah, and I love spent, games like $5 on Wargroove or something.
That's it?
Yeah, because I had, like, oh, I think it was $15 or something, and I had gold coins saved up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's what I'm going to use my gold coins for from now on, is, like, pay full price on, you know,
Big AAA games.
Direct development. Yep, AAA games. And then all my indie games will just be free.
Yep. So. That's the way to do it, I feel like.
Yeah, but, you know, I like, yeah, tactical RPGs I like. I wouldn't say...
I've never really played them before. Before Mario plus Rabbids.
Yeah, and is XCOM technically considered, like, a tactical RPG?
I don't know. I'm out of my...
Isn't that what Fire Emblem is? Isn't that what Fire Emblem is?
Yeah, which I'm going to get that game. And I kind of bought this game to see if I can get into Fire Emblem. And I think I could.
So Fire Emblem's like Advanced Wars?
I think it's a little bit different. It's more story-driven. I'm not the right person to be talking about the difference of those two games.
See, like, I hear Pear on NBC talk about, like, how much he loves Fire Emblem, and I just don't get it. But I also don't know, like, which Fire Emblem game should you play? Like, where do you even obtain that game?
You should email them for the question block.
Huh, okay, maybe.
Why not?
Okay.
I think I have a Ross Dog email address from when I set up your Twitter account. I'm going to write them an email.
I would love for you to send an email on behalf of me for a question that I really want answered, but you just feel like emailing them.
You know that's going to happen.
No doubt in my mind. I mean, it already practically has.
Jondra's here still. I'm joined by Rostock. Rostock, say hi.
Yo.
For the last time of the year, Rostock is saying hi. I can't believe it. We made it.